Welcome back to Silver Lake TV. I'm John Papa here at Microsoft, the pizza guy, as you can see with my name under here. Hopefully it's somewhere around there. Today, I have a couple great guests who flew in all the way from the UK, right?
Yeah.
I've got Dave and Tom, who I was getting backwards earlier today. Dave Crawford, Tom Eddings, you work with Microsoft UK, right?
Yeah, that's right. We're user experience consultants.
User experience, yeah. Both of you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. So it takes two guys to change a light bulb, right?
It takes two guys to design a nice light bulb to change.
Okay, cool. Bad developer jokes, but we were actually talking this week. I was talking with Arturo and Karina doing another design tips, and they said, hey, we've got these great guys who are in town who've done a lot of work for us on the design side, and why don't you just have them on the show, and we can talk about what you guys do.
Thanks for having us.
So this would be great. We've been going through. They've got this great slide deck they've been doing in some presentations on tips that they've been giving out for creating really cool and successful phone apps. So we've come here, and we're going to talk about, I think, four tips.
Yeah.
So some of them are going to be how to use Panorama the right way, buttons to use and not to use. One of them was about the web browser control. You had some tips. And the fourth one was branding, was it?
Yeah, it's about how to surface the brand properly inside Windows Phone.
Great. And before we get into those four, can you just quickly give us an idea of what is it you, I mean, we all know what designers do, but what is it you guys specifically do for Microsoft?
So specifically, we're here to help app houses who are developing apps for the Windows Phone platform really make the best apps they can do. Mm-hmm. So make sure they surface their customer's brand or their own brand properly through Windows Phone, but also not to trample on the user's experience of the device as well. And make sure that they get the best application they can out the door.
We support them with understanding Metro, basically.
Right, understanding the Metro guidelines that we have.
That's right.
So let's say, you know, I'm a big partner, you know, and I've got an app and I'm putting it through, or even just a little partner. You know, some of these apps come across your desk and you guys get to take a look at some of these, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah, that's right.
And just make sure, you know, you're not looking so much at functionality. You're just looking to make sure there's nothing that we could do to tweak it to make it even more successful.
Exactly, yeah. We also look at user flows and the tasks that they're trying to do to make sure the user can do them as fast as possible and that they're having a really good experience when using the app.
It's more intuitive to the user
exactly,
to flow through.
Yeah.
We had an episode with Susan who came on a couple of weeks ago and talked about user flows and just some quick things that you can do in that sense. So cool. So I'm sure our audience is tired of listening to me, so I'll let you guys start with your presentation.
Cool. Okay, so I've got a couple of things I want to talk to you guys about, as you mentioned earlier. First one we want to talk about is the Panorama. Mm-hmm. This is a fantastic control that we have in the Windows Phone, but it's something that people sometimes have a bit of difficulty implementing.
Yeah.
It's designed to be almost like a magazine cover for your application. So you surface a few highlighted bits of content in there. If you think if you get a magazine cover, it's got a couple of headlines on it, a nice big picture in the background, maybe a few links into some deeper content.
And it's not too deep right on
exactly.
that either.
Yeah, it's not a total index. You don't get like a table of contents on the magazine cover. Mm-hmm. So what we try and encourage people to do is to only surface the bits that would entice the user further into your application. Maybe a few key bits of functionality like search, refresh, add, that kind of thing.
Sure.
And then we say, okay, let users drill down when they actually want to do something more specific further down inside the application. Tom's got a few bits to talk about on themes and number of panes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
because the guidelines I've always heard is not to have too many lists or pages in the panorama. You don't want to have like 20.
Yeah, once you start getting over about 5 to 6 panes, six panes we really wouldn't recommend. Performance is going to take a hit. And
plus
also,
the width of the pane is
important
too.
Exactly, and it's difficult for users to keep horizontally scrolling through content.
I've also seen some which have like 2 panes.
Yeah.
And it's you know, in some cases I've seen it work, and others I've been like, why did you even bother?
Mm.
So it kind of depends.
It depends what type of panes they are. So if they're vertically scrolling or horizontally scrolling, we suggest that not all the panes are vertically scrolling, because then perhaps a pivot might be a better control.
Right.
Mix it up a bit. Use a combination of vertical scrolling, horizontal scrolling. It doesn't have to scroll, but
it seems like these controls have been out for a long time, but I mean, really, we've less than a year since RTM, right? So we're still learning how to use these controls the right way and still evolving, but I do. You see pivots and see panoramas used in so many apps now that some ways are just not used the right way.
Yeah. And I guess an important point to make here is that panoramas aren't always the solution to the problem here.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of people putting panorama controls in when they're actually not necessary, and something like just a flat page even or a pivot control would actually serve a better purpose, serve the purpose better than using a pano.
And putting images, we see companies put images behind them for no reason. If the image is tied to the content, absolutely, that's great, but it doesn't have to have an image.
You mean the panorama control having an image itself, kind of
like the background.
Yeah.
Um,
an arbitrary image is just noise to the user. It needs to be linked into their content in some way. So if you're designing, for example, a news application, you might want to put an image of the top story behind the panorama, just kind of tie people into it.
Yeah.
If you look at the core experiences on the device, such as music or pictures, it surfaces your pictures in the Pictures Hub. And in music and videos, it surfaces album art from the Now Play, sorry, artist art from the
Now
Play.
It's more natural in that case to see some kind of visual. But if you're doing some kind of... let's say it's a trip application. Maybe you don't need something, or maybe if you do, you put something that's relevant to your trip, like your itinerary. Or
exactly. We've seen some interesting examples, which I think are available publicly as well, of people putting itinerary information, even sometimes a check-in barcodes, that kind of stuff. There are some great blog posts by a guy called Alfred, who's in the Windows Phone design team, that talk about great panoramas design. Those on the Windows Phone team blog as well.
Yeah, they're great.
Okay. So what are some good tips not to do in a panorama, besides not having 20...
So floating buttons. Try to avoid putting buttons all over your panorama. Okay. It is a magazine cover. It's supposed to highlight content and encourage users to dig a bit deeper. It shouldn't be your entire application.
So you're saying more exploring as opposed to functionality.
And if you want to, and then put a navigation menu in there. So have a menu section as you see in like the People Hub or the Office Hub, where you can drill a bit deeper, and then that's where you put your contextual actions in the application bar.
Okay. What about list boxes or items controls of some sort? Would you say to put those in a panorama or to not? Because then you're kind of getting crossover between pivot.
Well, sometimes you do need to have list items in your panorama control. Mm-hmm. If you're showing, for example, news stories, you might have an image for the news story, a title, and a part of the description. Mm-hmm. So lists still do have a place inside panorama controls.
Okay, good.
You want to keep them short, though. We tend to tell people surface the top few and then have a more button. More link and let links deep into applications.
Right, so it's okay to have a list on one of the panes of Panorama, but it's if you're doing it on every page, it might end up looking more like you might need a pivot.
Exactly.
Instead.
Yeah.
So,
and while you're talking about list design is really important. So precedence of information. Use the phone as a device. As reference. Mm-hmm. So look at like the People Hub, how they organize their lists, the amount of space between each item.
It's important to convey hierarchy when you're designing list items. So you use things like font size, the accent color, that kind of stuff, to kind of show whether you should look first. So if you're displaying a headline, a date, and a description, make the headline a little bit larger, the date's not quite as important, make it smaller, or use the accent color.
Sure, you want to draw your eyes to it. As opposed to looking really cool, you want to make it what's supposed to stand out most relevant first.
Yeah, and the best place, as we'll say this over and over, is the device. The best examples are always on the device and built into the core experiences.
Yeah, it's good. And you can see even just like finger spacing for when you're choosing lists, like you've got the list here of topics on the pano, or even the images list there in latest. Yeah. You want to make sure you've got enough space, but in the same sense, you want to put more than just one item on a page, too.
Yeah.
So, good. Okay, so I think we covered the pano pretty well. Why don't we move on to the next topic?
Okay. The next one we have is kind of a cardinal sin of Windows Phone experience design, and that's close buttons and back buttons. Because the device has got a hardware button on it, and users are used to pressing that to go back and back to the applications or back to the home screen.
Do we really? The close button, maybe we have a discussion about the back button. Do people really still do that? Are they putting back buttons on apps?
Yeah, it's we are seeing it quite a bit. I suppose it's starting to tail off now. It used to be much more prolific.
As people get used to the platform,
But, and you're saying that, I assume, because you've got a back button on the phone,
exactly.
on a hardware device.
You don't need to duplicate.
There are also further complications for the developer. As soon as you start putting software back buttons in, you have to start managing the back stack yourself, whereas the back stack's taken care of by the back button on the device normally. We see that when people who've been developing for different mobile platforms come over to Windows Phone 7, it's almost second nature to put back and close buttons in. It's something that you don't need. It's taken care of, and we'll worry about the pain of that.
So on the close button, why not a close button? I'll play dumb on
devil's advocate. Again, you can just use the back button to close your previous action or to cancel it.
Okay, so this is for canceling actions or for what about getting out of the application itself? I've seen people have like exit buttons for getting out of the app. Is that a good behavior or bad behavior?
That's very bad
behavior. Bad behavior, yeah.
Okay.
You just use the hardware buttons.
Right, because you can hit the middle button, which I never remember. We call it the Windows button, the Start button.
Yeah.
What do we call that these days?
I call it the Start
button. Start button, yeah.
Okay. Purely because it looks like one of my keyboard. But
they focus on that, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember a debate going on and never reconciled it in my head what it's supposed to be. But yeah, because you can hit that, go back to the main options, or you can hit the back button once, get out, or you can now hold the back button.
Yes, yeah, beautiful new manga feature.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that, by the way. So cool.
Cool.
All right, so I think we've got that.
Excellent.
The next is the web browser controls.
Yes.
I've struggled a lot with this one myself.
It is a difficult point, this one. when devs are developing applications for the Windows Phone and they're trying to port lots of content from a site they've already got. Say that, again, let's go back to the magazine, sorry, the newspaper example.
Okay.
They have a web presence already, and if they want to get an app to market quickly, they might just effectively put a web browser with a brand at the top of it and just surface the actual mobile website inside
sure.
there. We really don't like that for a number of reasons.
It's not, performance can take a hit, for example. They're difficult to navigate because the touch targets are different. It's such a different experience. Use Silverlight whenever possible. Or Silverlight controls.
So let me throw a devil's advocate back at you again real quick. So web browser control, we're saying basically don't use them all over the place is kind of the tip. But there's a couple options you have, depending upon what you were going to use web browser control for. Mm. You could use a web browser control inside your app to kind of keep it inside the experience. Another option is you could use a rich text type experience if really that's all you wanted. Or you could jump out to the real web browser.
Yeah.
So we normally recommend people to be kicked out to the main web browser. Let the user know they're going to go to the web browser and then put them in the web browser.
So open up the task and go and run real web browser.
The problem with hosting it inside your application is users don't always know it's a web browser.
Right.
Especially if you brand it.
Developers will know.
Exactly.
They can tell, the users won't know.
So people expect to be able to use Pinch to Zoom and panning and things like that inside the web browser, actually inside Internet Explorer.
And you may not surface that or the address bar.
It's confusing and it's just inconsistent as well. The other thing we see is people putting browser controls in and not disabling gestures. If you're going to host a web browser control, then especially in something with gesture competition, you need to worry about disabling your panning.
There are exceptions to this, really. Mm.
There always are.
Yeah,
that's why we still have the control.
There's, say, Facebook and Twitter authentication. That's some things we see quite a lot.
Because it's task-based.
Yeah.
So you're going into something and doing a little bit of logging in, authorizing, and you're being kicked back into your application.
That's what I was about to say. I wrote a Twitter app, which I've talked about it a lot, never released it. It's one of my great little demo apps, but two reasons I used a web browser control. One was for OAuth, when you're logging in, just get in and get out. And the other one was lack of, because I wrote this back last year, there was lack of any rich text control.
Yeah.
So I wanted to have rich text in there, and HTML is rich.
Yeah.
So we use it in that case. Is that, how would you recommend somebody do something like that today, if you want a rich text?
You could use a rich text block. What we really prefer people to do is to actually bring it out as native Silverlight controls, but obviously you have to start worrying about creating your own layout manager effectively to put links in line with content and stuff.
Right.
So the rich text control is probably a good way to take for the time being.
Is that one of the reasons that control came out at this point?
We don't actually know why that control is developed.
Yeah.
We're quite happy it has been developed,
though.
But I'd imagine that was a driving factor.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of things, like especially in list boxes, if you wanted to have really rich content inside of an item for a list box, it became very difficult to figure out. We were concatenating strings together for a while.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Yeah, it kind of sorts that issue out.
So we're saying, yes, web browser controls overall, not great for performance. The experience for the user is harder. And then you've got to get rid of gestures. And so generally, you want to just stay away from these things. I'm actually asking, not telling, right?
Yeah. Effectively, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Using the controls.
If you need them, make sure you have a very, very valid reason for using them.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then you had the final tip, which I think is the most important.
Branding. This is something we come across all the time. Metro, by its definition, is very stripped back. And so sometimes brands find, we sometimes find it, you might explain this better, it's difficult for brands, sometimes brands find it hard to surface themselves through Metro.
It kind of ends up being an all or nothing approach for a lot of brands.
Right.
So you'll find that some people are scared of putting any branding in, particularly a lot of apps that we see where there's not much of design input into an application development. So say it's a small dev house or it's somebody creating the first Windows Phone app, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They find it quite hard to strike the middle ground. We get some things which are completely black and white, which is fine, that's Metro, but we like people to try and elevate the brand a little bit more to make it feel a bit more immersive to them.
But
Metro is great for that.
Right.
We've seen some great examples on the device, Office, Xbox, they do it really well.
Right, I think the email app is a great example of how Metro works, and it really shows the brand.
Yeah.
But
then
you've got things like Netflix, too, which is a great app, and they've got their brand, and they, I don't know if they do or don't, but they seem to go away from Metro in some cases.
Yeah.
But I think it works for them. And,
how,
they still follow the basic themes, but, they've got the red background. And,
But so, Amazon are a good example as well. They look great on Metro. Most brands do when it's done right.
And again, if you look to the device, think about Xbox. That's a very rich brand. But you go into the Xbox Hub on the device, and it's all nicely paired back, nicely metro. You see the same thing with the Office Hub.
You can still tell it's Xbox.
Exactly,
you still feel the brand.
Yeah. And we do have a couple of tips as well on creating a good brand experience for end users.
Why don't you read these off real quick, since they're kind of small.
So, good ways to do it. Use a background image if you've got a panorama.
Background image is pano. Okay.
Yeah. Don't go over the top with this. Where possible, use a contextual image like we talked about for example, the news application. If not, you can still surface some design, some brand elements through that. Think of the Xbox has got the swooshes at the top of the screen there, that kind of thing. We like it when people add brand logos to the pano in the top corner. Lets you know what app you're in, makes it feel a bit more cohesive as well. And also, the phone has got built-in accent colors on the device. Use those where you can, but if you've got your brand's got your own accent colors, then use your brand's accent colors. Just make sure that when people switch between the light and dark theme or change their own accent color, it doesn't interfere with it. So sometimes you want to fix it rather than.
So if your brand's colors are blue, for example, like a Microsoft blue or Silverlight TV blue, and you don't, if you're saying it's all right to go ahead and use that blue throughout with the instead of the accent colors, just make sure it works in light and dark.
And use it sparingly as well. I mean, don't go over the top with it. If your brand's got a really diverse color palette, really pick where you're going to use those colors. We've seen newspaper applications where they have that each of their sections is color coded, which is great. But when you go into a section, the top of the section is colored, or maybe the titles are all colored, but there's no other colors that go in with that. So if you go into politics and politics is red, all the accent color in politics is red, but there's no blue mixing in there, there's no yellow or anything. It's very clean and very clear.
Okay, cool.
Equally,
we got some bad things to do too, right?
Yeah. Custom typefaces are tricky. We know that some brands have a custom typeface. The thing is like Arial, and what was the other one?
Helvetica.
Helvetica are very similar to Sego Windows Phone.
Mm-hmm. And they're very popular too.
Yeah, and so it sometimes doesn't look right because it's so similar that it's
it feels inconsistent.
Yeah,
it feels a bit broken.
Yeah.
If you see Sego next to Arial, for example, they're very similar, but they're just slightly different.
Yeah. Right.
And it's almost like the uncanny valley when people go into your application. It's just like, well, this kind of looks right, but it's also a little bit chunky.
Sure.
So if your typeface is very different, say you've got a...
A Comic Sans.
let's not use those words.
We got to throw it out there. Okay.
Yeah. If you've got a serif font, for example, that could work really well alongside Metro. Mm-hmm. But use it sparingly. The places that we like to see that being used are titles of panorama sections or pivot sections or the odd title here and there.
Titles, but maybe not the content
Maybe
itself.
Not the content, yeah.
Okay. And it makes the app more consistent with a Windows Phone user. They're used to seeing that font. And if you're switching into apps that don't use it, it can be a bit like, oh, I've moved out of this experience now.
Additionally, the font was designed specifically for readability on the device, it's optimized.
And the font size as well. So developers, when they're developing for the font sizes, in Blend, you can see they've got custom styles of the font, different font sizes. So I think it's large, extra large, small.
And they've got custom margins around them too, intentionally.
Yeah. So use those. Definitely use those, and that will help with alignment. Alignment. We haven't mentioned alignment, but it's really important.
Yeah, it's one of the things I find a lot is fonts, which a lot of people don't talk about as much. They're really important in an app because I'll spend a lot, I'm not a designer, but I'll spend a lot of time in my apps just choosing the right way the fonts work in regular Silverlight.
Yeah.
Going over to the phone, and in some ways it's kind of nice because I can just stick with the standard. And
yeah, it's kind of done for
people
you.
People kind of expect it to look that way.
Yeah. One of the principles behind the Metro design was to celebrate typography, and the font, the typeface is absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. Use things that complement it rather than things that try and replace it.
So I like the next one that you've got here.
Yes.
Using custom style buttons instead of Metro ones. You're saying that's bad.
Yeah.
So no big circles that are unobtrusive and not obviously a button.
Yeah, with like gloss and bevels on them. We don't need that. Use the Metro, standard Metro buttons. You can change the colors of the borders to tie in with your brand.
Sure.
That's fine. That's great. But yeah, custom buttons, don't stick with them.
In a lot of ways, you know, when I first started doing phone development, I found I was using a lot of buttons. Then the more I was using it, I realized I didn't need a lot of buttons.
Yeah.
So, more and more these days, you see the apps don't actually have buttons because there's other gestures that you can find the user doing.
And use the app bar as well. Don't put buttons all over your screen. The app bar's there. Windows Phone users are used to seeing or know where those contextual actions are. They're going to be in the app bar because they're used to seeing it all over the device.
And you can still do app bars, you know, application-wide. Menu items, or you can do them page-specific menu items.
Yeah. And some things that we found as well is that developers don't know that they can change the color of the app bar. Mm-hmm. And if they can do that to tie it in with the brand that they're developing it for.
Sure.
We've seen really that works quite well, actually, and really well.
Yeah, I didn't know you could do that, actually, until I saw, I forget what app it was, but across the top they had their color, let's say it was pink, as a banner, and then at the bottom the app bar matched it, but it kind of looked nice
the way they did.
It wasn't pink, but...
I mean, there's some colors I'd avoid, but on the whole, it looks really good.
The one thing I don't believe you can change in the app bar is the icons will always be white or black.
Right.
And so you need to make sure that if you do choose colors or custom backgrounds or that stuff, that you make it so you can still see and read the icons and the text that appear in there.
And that actually is a good segue into something I wanted to mention, too. There's a really good tutorial out there, and I forget who did it, but I'll put the link up on the site for this video, of how to create the application icon buttons so you can use it for the light or dark theme. Yeah. It's actually not that hard to do. Again, non-designer, it's pretty easy for me to go through. Even if you don't have expensive product, you can use Expression Design to do it.
Yeah.
So that'll work. And then there's also, I just found the other day, I think Sean Wildermuth was tweeting about this. There's a site up there which has got a whole bunch of free icons for Windows Phone. And I forget the name of it, but...
Name escapes me as well, but it's a useful resource. I think there's about 120 icons there.
Yeah, there's a whole... And some of them were kind of wacky. I mean, they were just... Yeah. There was the standard ones on the top, and then the bottom was like a rubber duck and a bunch of other things. I'm like, not sure what I'd use a rubber duck for, but... in a Windows app.
Yeah.
We all have one at home, right?
If you design your own icons, the only thing I would say is try and keep them in line with Metro, two-dimensional, single color, flat as well. The other thing that we see sometimes is people think they've got a circle, so they're going to fill it. They're going to fill it with as much stuff as they can. And sometimes making it slightly smaller is actually really good. If you look at what's on the device, there's normally quite a good border inside the circle before the icon appears.
That's a good point.
And make sure it's clear as well, so it needs to be... We know what that icon means.
There is actually...
But there is text underneath on the app bar, but it's kind of...
It's
one-stop shop. You're going to learn it pretty quickly, so you'll
see. Sometimes I don't like in a Windows Phone app when I have to click the, whatever you call it, the up button on the app bar to actually figure out what does that button mean.
Which brings us nicely into, I guess, a really important point about buttons, which is around mixing metaphors. So people are used to certain icons in buttons doing certain things. Mm-hmm. One of the things we see quite a lot is people using play buttons to mean next. And when people see the circular button with the play icon in, they expect media to play. That's what you associate with it. So
what would you suggest for saying, like, next in that case?
Just an arrow. There's actually the arrow that you see on the software input panel, a little keyboard, when you're in Bing, for example, on the search page. Okay. You see, like, a regular arrow.
Not a chevron, but an arrow. Okay.
And if no icons exist for the metaphor you're trying to convey, create a new one. Don't repurpose an existing one. That just confuses people.
Yeah. I found a couple times I've been able to take an existing one and then change it and delete it and morph it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not take the existing one and just say, oh, the save button. Well, I want to make this mean, you know, floppy disk today.
Yeah.
Or something else. So, okay. So I appreciate you guys coming on. I wanted to call out one other thing that happened this week, which I thought was really interesting. Brandon Watson, who you guys know and I know, and I hope you all know as well, here at Microsoft, issued a challenge to the creator, Scott Adams, of the Dilbert cartoon. I guess I don't know the exact stories. I may get some of this wrong, but from what I read on Scott's blog, he was complaining about some other devices and battery life or something. And Brandon wrote him an email and said, basically, and I'm paraphrasing again because you can read all this up in the blog, and I'll put a link for it. Basically, Scott, if you would like, I'll send you a phone, and if you like it, you get to keep it, and if you don't like it, you can let us know, and I think he said he'll donate $1,000 to a charity of his choice.
Wow. Okay.
So I thought it was cool, and Scott Adams took him up on it. And it was kind of neat. And I like Scott's response to Brandon. He put up on the blog. He's like, first I thought this was a terrible idea. He's like, Scott said, basically, I criticize things for a living. So you don't want me doing this. But it'd be interesting to see how it turns out. And I thought it was really gutsy of Brandon to do that. And if you guys have any interest, you want to check out Brandon's Twitter, I'll put it up on the site too. You can actually follow Brandon doing this. He's... I give him a lot of credit for doing something like that. Because what if he doesn't like it?
So. If he doesn't like it, it'll end up in a cartoon, I reckon.
Brandon might end up in a cartoon.
Yeah.
Brandon Burt. You know, like a dog Burt and cat. Anyway. But I thought it was really cool. I wanted to throw it out there and put it up. So, hey, guys, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Keith. Yes.
Love the tips. It'd be great. And we'll put these up on there, too, and give you guys your links to your blogs and Twitter if you do that as well.
Excellent. Cool. Thanks
a lot.
Thank you.
Cheers. Appreciate coming
on. Cheers. Thank you very much.
And thank you all for watching Silverlight TV.